We know there's a lot of outlook ahead of this Friday's report. How is that weighing in on a trade on a Monday? Good afternoon. You're listening to the American Ag Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. Brian Split joins us today. He is with agmarket.net. And I know the Friday report, getting a bit of an outlook as folks prepare for that. And USDA was out and about gathering data as well this last week. From your guys' perspective, Brian, what are you seeing or what could we expect come Friday?
Well, Susan, I think the trade is really trying to figure out what the USDA is going to do with yield. And we obviously had a August weather pattern that was dry. And, I spoke to Matt, my business partner, Matt Bennett, this morning. And, he's got some farms that haven't had any rain since July 28th. So, the Eastern Corn Belt specifically has had a really dry spell. And we've got, record to near record, going over the last 133 years of dryness in some of the areas in the Eastern Belt. So that would lead everyone to believe that we should take the top end yield off of, the potential of the crop. The problem in how that occurs over the next several months, and all we really have is a very similar situation to last year. It was a very dry August. But from the USDA methodology, we didn't get to what really caused the drop in yield until November to start, and that was the ear weight. So over the next 2 months, going back a year, they did raise yield in September and in October, even though that August was dry. I don't know if they have the same behavior this year and wait till we get to the ear weight conversation in November to see that piece of the puzzle come into lower yield. But that is definitely a possibility from their perspective of balance sheet management. Now, we did submit a number that is 4 bushels lower than where the USDA sits as of the August WASDE report. That's the same number we submitted last month. That's where we think the crop potentially is. That's 184.8. And when you think back to last year, the highest yield number the USDA gave us was 183.8, and they eventually brought it down to the January number of 179.3. If you apply the same percentage reduction on similar crop weather circumstances in August, that would give you 184.2, just to kind of give you a sense of a percentage-wise where that would set everything. So we think there's a pretty good shot. Carryout does come in under 2 billion bushels on this report if there is a yield reduction that they address right now. But that's going to come by, way of a reduction in production, but also likely a decrease in the feed number, the feed residual demand portion of that balance sheet.
What about as you look at the tech picture and just kind of the whole, in a sense of, we've got this report, we know that there's going to be knee-jerk reaction come Friday after numbers are released. What are you seeing for a Monday, a few days out for how the markets are really reacting?
Well, so, a few days ahead of the report, the market did start lower last night. We have recovered to higher on the day, and we're getting close to where we were, to start the week last week. It does seem like we've kind of changed the momentum of the corn market. The month of August on a monthly bar put in what you would call a hammer bottom. That's a type of a candlestick. And so what that represents is an open where we trade below the opening price for a portion of the month with a long tail below the opening price. And then by the end of the month, you close at the highs above the open. And that's what we did in the month of August. So generally that type of a monthly bar would suggest that we're changing momentum from selling rallies to now buying dips. We have started to have a series of higher highs and higher lows since the August WASDE report, which put in the contract low at this point. But I think you're going to encounter a tremendous amount of resistance on December corn between about 428 and 434, between retracement levels, previous lows that were scored between, let's say, March and June of this year in that 434 area. There's a gap at 32 and 3/4. The 100-day moving average is just above 430. We had a mid-July high of 430 and a quarter. And I think that type of level with all of those different resistance levels, kind of a confluence of numerous things there, I think that's probably a level where the first time we see it, we're gonna test it and back off before hopefully pushing through it on a second run. But I think you're going to see a wall of resistance the first time we see that number. But again, big picture, I do think that with the monthly bar that we put in the month of August, that the momentum of the market has shifted.
Brian, do you see some strong domestic demand, though, because we've got some good biofuels demand going on there?
So one of the things that that we're likely to see from a domestic demand side is reductions in the feed residual. The USDA really plumped that number up. You know, based on the cattle inventory, I don't know that that supports that type of a feed number unless we really feed, you know, animals out to some very high weights. So I think that's the first category that people will look at. I think most people running their old crop balance sheets are thinking that that our exports are actually a little higher on old crop than where the USDA has us, but ethanol, our corn for ethanol, might be a little bit lower than where USDA has us, so kind of a net offset there. But you know, by and large, I do think that you know the that portion of the balance sheet it has been robust. The thing with the demand that's on the balance sheet right now, a lot of it came last month after the USDA raised the yield. So they, and that's kind of a procedural thing. They'll partially offset a big jump in production by a jump in demand. Now I know a lot of people are kind of poo-pooing that, thinking, okay, well, if the yield comes back down, then they're going to just take demand away again. And they likely will. That's what they did January of last year. But very quickly, they were proved wrong several months later by after that March WASDE or the quarterly stock report in March, where from that point forward, they had to put that export demand back in because it never slowed down. And I would argue we really didn't even see the export demand slow down at $5 corn. So to me, the movement in prices from the February high to the lows that we scored recently was more about the shift of the market's focus to new crop and less on the old crop because we had such a large production number coming on the new crop balance sheet. But I think there's a period here where, yes, maybe the USDA is going to cushion the balance sheet with a reduction in demand, but I think you have to see prices go higher to warrant that. The world is getting very used to using cheap corn here at $4, and just because the USDA takes away demand on the balance sheet doesn't make it so. The prices are going to have to find a number to cause that to happen.
Let's look at the livestock side, because cattle last week closed for the first time in the negative in 11 weeks. They didn't let the grass grow very long, and we jumped right back into the green today.
We did. We started a little bit negative this morning after a positive open. We spent, you know, the first maybe half hour of trade at some lower numbers. But, you know, technically both the live cattle and the feeder cattle, and maybe I'm looking at, you know, December live cattle and the November feeders, they both started this last really strong leg higher right at the beginning of the quarter on July 2nd. And if you look at the uptrend that we've had in place since July 2nd, that's right where the market's caught this morning. We were not able to get through last Friday's lows and take out that support and make a lower weekly low to start the week. I'm placing a very high level of technical importance on both live and feeder cattle at the low scored on August 25th. If we break through those lows, now we're establishing, kind of counter to what we talked about in corn, a pattern of lower highs and lower lows. So that was the last swing low on August 25th that was made before going up and making our current contract highs. If we take that low out, we're also violating the uptrend that we've had in place for the quarter. We're going to be breaking through the 20-day moving average, which has held this whole run. So I think that would be where I would start to get technically concerned. But yes, to start the week, they saved it right where they needed to. And, you know, as we progress later in the session, we're close to the highs. So, you know, until we start really breaking through support, this market is still in an uptrend and hasn't done any damage on this pullback. Now, I will mention on the commitment of trade report, it does look like the managed money, so your funds, are reducing their length. They're reducing their long positions. And we are starting to see an increase in the short building of short positions for managed money. So that's maybe a little bit of a clue here short term that we might be due for a little bit of a pullback. And frankly, you could have a pretty sizable correction. You know, we could retrace half of the move that we had from the month of July to the contract highs and just be right back to where we started the month of August. So it would be a sizable move. But, you know, in the context of where we've been recently, it might be healthy for the market to do that and maybe test some of the longer term uptrend supports in these markets.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks so much, Brian. Brian Split joining us today. He's with AgMarket.net. And a quick reminder that commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss, not suitable to all investors. That's the Monday market wrap-up on the American Ag Network.